This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Jeff Palermo producing today, and your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Glad you're with us. And signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial, the coronavirus tracking map that is available in many places, including The Advocate, has 1,388 positive cases as of noon yesterday, 46 dead in Louisiana, 8,603 people tested. So it is a case in which we know we have far more cases than has been reported because we have 4.7 million people and only 8,603 of us have been tested. So there we are. In New Orleans, where it is a profound outbreak, and the governor has been keeping us up to date, there is a quote from an official say it's like fighting a war zone. 877-217-5757. And with us is a gentleman who not only is a man of the cloth, but also is intricately involved in this community, Reverend Chris Andrews. His group is Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge, where he is executive director. And he is also pastor of Jubilee Pioneers. Many of us remember Chris Andrews for 22 years as pastor of First United Methodist, and he is here to talk about matters of spirituality and otherwise. And next week at this time, next Wednesday, we'll hear from the Bishop of Baton Rouge, Bishop Michael Duca of the Catholic Diocese. Chris Andrews, you are in your house today, something you rarely are at 9:09 in the morning. Usually you're out and about, quite often building homes and or refurbishing homes in areas hardest hit in our community. But what is it like now for a man who is constantly in motion like you to be sidelined?
Well, these are very strange and different days, Jim. We're trying to make the best of it, and I think we are in our family. But you're right. Normally I'm up in North Baton Rouge about this time of day, either at our warehouse or on one of the job sites that we are working at. And so, you know, everything has kind of come to a screeching halt. We did do our church service this week online, which was a new experience for me. I'm not a very technical person, but it worked well, and we'll continue to do that until the days clear up and we can resume normal living again.
That's Facebook Live, I guess, you were doing the church service.
Right, right, uh-huh. Well, and it'll be on a Sunday, Monday nights at 7 o'clock on Jubilee Pioneer Facebook.
What do you make of these ministers who are defying the orders to stay at home and urging their flock to come and worship?
I think they're being irresponsible, quite frankly, and foolish. We have got a major health crisis that's facing not only our state but the entire world, and every one of us needs to do whatever we can, small or large, to fight this thing. And certainly we've been told by all of the experts that social distancing is one of the best barriers from the virus, and to just violate that is it's not only irresponsible, it's almost criminal. It's putting people at risk needlessly, and it's foolhardy. I saw a thing a couple of weeks ago where some minister who I don't know the name of somewhere came through media, said, you know, my congregation is prepared to lick the floor of the sanctuary to show that this virus is all a hoax. Well, that is utter stupidity, utter stupidity. And unfortunately, religion has had its moments of stupidity across the eons.
Well, I think it's good to have faith. It's great to have faith, especially in these times. But as Edwin Edwards, our former governor, who has acknowledged that he is an agnostic, he said, it doesn't matter how much faith you have, if you jump out of a tall building, you're a dead man. And well, in this case, if you lick the floor of the sanctuary, you might be a dead man.
You well might be. And, you know, faith is something that I do think is very important in this time. We need faith that the days are going to get better. We need faith that the future is going to allow us to resume our lives. But in the meantime, we've got responsibilities, and part of that is taking care of one another. And one of the ways we do that is we observe what our health officials are urging us to do, which is social distancing. That's one of the reasons I'm not in your studio this morning, but sitting at my house talking to you.
The first time we have ever talked, to my knowledge, on the air in which you have not reported as called upon. And it's fully understandable. And and
well,
you gotta follow the orders. And news media are essential. It doesn't matter what happens in the rest of the world. We will always be one of the entities that is trying to stay with you under the circumstances. But there can be precautions, and Chris is taking one of those, and he is on his phone. Now, up to 5,000 students have been allowed to return to Liberty University's campus after school officials confirmed the Christian school based in Lynchburg, Virginia, is reopening. University President Jerry Falwell Jr. is defying nationwide calls for mandatory school closures, inviting students to return amid a worsening coronavirus pandemic. Falwell is a major and vocal backer of the president, and evangelicals, as we know, are a core part of the president's support base. The president has in recent days appeared to balk at a growing U.S. shutdown in the face of the virus and claimed the U.S. would reopen soon, alarming many health professionals at Liberty. Residence halls reopened. Despite most classes moving online, faculty members have been directed to report to campus. Here's a quote from Reverend Falwell, Junior Falwell. He says, "I think we are in a way protecting the students by having them on campus together. I don't have conditions that put them at risk." What do you think?
I think he's crazy. I mean, you know, that just flies in the face of all facts and all of the expert advice we're getting from the medical people and from the news media. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. And it boggles my mind and makes me wonder what in the world is going on that an individual would, put forth an invitation or an order like that to his campus, expose people. And, you know, Jim, it's not something that if this happens at Liberty University that stays at Liberty University. It goes beyond the boundaries of that campus. It infects potentially thousands, millions of people. I mean, this just doesn't make good sense at all.
The president yesterday said he would like to be open for business in this country on Easter Sunday, saying that Easter is very special to him and the country. And that would be nice, but we're talking 2 weeks from Sunday if this were to occur. Is that practical?
I don't think it is. I mean, I know all of us have made plans for Easter, and now those plans are having to be remade and adjusted. I was going to be preaching at Hemingbow on Easter Sunday morning, as I've done for the last many Easters, and that's always a wonderful experience, beautiful time of the year, beautiful setting. Arlen Deese and his staff lay out the red carpet, and people from, you know, surrounding parishes come, and it's a wonderful day, and I wish with all of my heart that we could have that as planned, but I don't believe it's going to happen. And I can understand the president's anxiousness to get the country up and running again. That's his job. But the reality is we're facing an enemy here that is tenacious and is not going to go away quickly, and we're going to have to face that reality in practical and sensible ways, and one of those is we've got to suspend normal operations. So on Easter Sunday, I think instead of being at Hemingbow, though I will say that I have not heard officially from Arlen that this is a canceled or suspended service, but I suspect it will be. Instead, I'm going to probably be doing a video sermon with Jubilee of Asheville, which is what I call our mother church, where Jubilee Pioneers emanated from.
Well, as I look at the breakdown of countries right now, the latest, China, 81,218 instances, but only 47 new cases yesterday. So there is encouragement that countries that have been proactive to trying to get this under control have largely done so. China and South Korea in particular, although South Korea, actually the number is 100 new cases yesterday. USA, we're up to 55,000 cases and going, 785 deaths. Italy, 69,176 cases and 6,820 deaths. And that's a country with 60 million people. And the hotspot right now is Spain, which yesterday reported 5,552 new cases, the most in the world. And this is a country with 47 million people. and a total of 47,610 known cases. So Europe is being hit particularly hard by this, Reverend Andrews. And the United States has a lot of people who travel in and out of our country. And the reason I'm sure that we're having such a challenge in the New Orleans area is that, as we know, many people from all over the world visited the great city, the crown jewel of Louisiana, for Mardi Gras.
Yes. And I think, Jim, I mean, you know, we can't go back, obviously, but the key to dealing with this virus is to get out in front of it. And those places that instituted mandatory lockdowns and social distancing early on have shown positive results.
India, by the way, has a total lockdown. In that country, which has more people than anyone in the world, 606 cases right now. So they're taking precautions, even though they have not been hit as hard as other places. And we'll talk about why that may be the case when we return with Reverend Andrews after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. The Reverend Chris Andrews is with us, who's also executive director of Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge. The New York Times reports people fleeing New York to other parts of the country have been told to quarantine themselves for 14 days. President Trump says he wants the U.S. opened by Easter. The number of deaths in Spain has surpassed the total in China. So China is now third in the number of deaths. Well, President Vladimir Putin of Russia has postponed a referendum on constitutional changes that would allow him to stay in power until 2036. The $2 trillion relief package accepted by Congress is the biggest in American history. And before we return to our conversation with Reverend Andrews, the temperature in Baton Rouge today is expected to reach a record number, 90 degrees, for this date, March 25th. And now, under ordinary circumstances, we would be complaining about the heat, but this story from the New York Post, warm temperatures slow down the spread of the novel coronavirus. They don't completely eradicate it, but according to scientists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, 90% of COVID-19 transmissions that have occurred have happened in regions with temperatures between 37 and 63 degrees. Coronavirus cases have been reported in countries with equatorial climates and those in the southern hemisphere, which are now in the summer, but regions with average temperatures above 64.4 degrees account for fewer than 6% of the global cases. Whatever the temperatures or wherever the temperatures were colder, the number of cases started increasing quickly. That from a scientist at the university who co-authored this study. You see it in Europe. This is Qasem Bukhari. You see it in Europe, even though the healthcare there is among the world's best. The pattern applies in the U.S. The outbreak has developed more slowly in southern states other than Louisiana. States like Arizona, Florida, and Texas have fared better than New York, Washington, Colorado, and California. California, despite the fact that many people have it, is not out of control. It's actually somewhere in the middle. But they have so many people, 40 million people, which means that one in eight Americans or thereabouts lives in the state of California. Naturally, they're going to have more cases than most other states, but they don't have as many as the great state of New York. 25,000 cases. Jeff, 877-217-5757. Reverend Andrews, let's hope for warm weather.
Let's hope for warm weather. And, Jim, you know, I just back to the social distancing, I think that's so important. People need to really pay close attention to their interaction with everyone. I heard an interesting conversation with John Barry yesterday, the author of The Great Influenza, Louisiana resident. He was citing the difference between Philadelphia and St. Louis in that pandemic of flu back in 1918. Philadelphia did not impose social distancing. They had a big parade. 300,000 people showed up. 48 hours, the flu hit that city with a vengeance. And there were 212 deaths per 1,000 in Philadelphia. By contrast, St. Louis, which immediately instituted a lockdown, quarantine, they had 10 deaths per 1,000. So, you know, it's a no-brainer. That's what we've got to do.
Well, what about the president alluding to the emotional toll this is taking, the shutdown? That has an impact, and
it
has to be considered. But I gather you're saying, as do most people who are professionals in the health community, that the shutdown is much better than a mass rush to hospitals with people dying of coronavirus.
That's exactly right. And one of the blessings I think of living in the time that we do live in is that even though we may physically have to distance ourselves, we have this wonderful technology that allows people to communicate in a variety of ways. I think Smiley Anders had a little piece today of someone who had a cocktail party via Facebook. You know, there are some ways for people to connect. Isolation is the cruelest form of punishment there is. Solitary confinement is a terrible, punishment for anyone. We're social beings, and we need one another, and we need to be in each other's lives. But these days, we've got to do that in a different way than is our habit, or else we're not going to have any lives. And that's just the bottom line. And so, you know, the president, yeah, I can understand he wants the country up and running. I want my Jubilee Pioneers to be meeting on Monday nights. I want our Rebuilding Together to be out working every day in the homes of people who desperately, desperately need our services. But for right now, those things are just not possible. And we've got to accept that reality and live through it.
All right. Here's a email from Tracy at the Capitol, who I doubt is at the Capitol today, stating that a lot of ministers want their congregants to return so they can pass that collection basket. You can't do that online, can you?
Well, I tell you, churches today are pretty sophisticated, and most of them have online donation buttons that people can push if they wish to do so. Unfortunately, my poor little Jubilee Pioneers doesn't have that. So we're sort of dead in the water right now. But yeah, churches are businesses, and they've got bills to pay. Lights have to be kept on, they've got employees, and the way they pay those bills is they pass those plates.
Well, you mentioned John Barry, who wrote the definitive book about the 1918 pandemic, and I'm reading about it. It says the first known case of the Spanish flu, it was called the Spanish flu for wrong reasons.
Right.
It appeared in Kansas. It started in Kansas.
Right. But John Barry has discounted that. He's done more research, and he's not certain now, by his own admission, of where the origin was. But I know that what you're talking about on that military base, and they put those troops on the trains and sent them across the country. No doubt that had a negative effect and did, contribute to the spread of the disease. But Barry himself is saying that that's probably not the ground zero of its origin.
Okay. And in August, after a summer in which it largely abated, it came back with a vengeance. And so we're talking about the start of the 1918 college football season. It says cases of Spanish flu were on the rise once again throughout the U.S., and football programs across the country were forced to truncate their schedules as players fell ill, practices were canceled, and travel was decreased as much as possible. LSU did not play a football season in 1918, and the stated reason has always been that it was because of World War One. It wasn't
right.
Because of World War One. It was because of this pandemic.
Right, exactly.
And it says the season did go on, but was nearly killed before the Spanish flu even reappeared. With World War One in its fourth year of combat operations, the U.S. military was preparing for a major offensive in early 1919. The War Department requested a reevaluation of the football schedule, but supporters lobbied that the physical benefits of athletic training were compatible with the schedule of military training. As a result, football teams were back on the gridiron to practice for the 1918 season when the Spanish flu returned. Programs were forced to deal with illnesses to their players and to opponents' rosters. Games were canceled from the onset, including a key contest between the University of Chicago, Bernie Sanders' alma mater, I don't think he was there in 1918, and the University of Pittsburgh in early October. So the elephant in the room here in Louisiana is that we may not have a football season, and I think it's looking more and more that if we do, it may be a case in which the teams are playing without fans. But if coaches get it, if players get it, I have my doubts as to whether the country will allow a football season from both the college perspective and the NFL. And think of the doldrums that will cause, Chris Andrews. As Jim Wharton said, when LSU has a losing season, the whole state gets the mullygullies. Imagine a fall with no football, no Saints, no LSU, no nothing. Can you imagine that, Chris Andrews?
Hard to imagine, and I hope it doesn't happen.
Well, we're going to spend a few more minutes with Reverend Andrews, and then we'll hear from Captain Bobby Ragsdale, class president at West Point. Also, he was president of his class at Newman in New Orleans and vice president of his graduate class at Harvard. He's in business in the greater New Orleans area, and he'll give his take on scams in this world we're living in. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Reverend Chris Andrews, joining us as he always does when called upon, and perhaps one of the two or three, or maybe the best-known minister in the Baton Rouge area. He's been around for a while, and for years he was a staple on local television with his sermons to his congregation. And all those years, I bet discussions about pandemics were rare, Reverend Andrews.
Rare indeed, and may it be so again. But right now we're in for a tough walk and a tough fight, and I encourage people to, you know, keep their faith that days will get better. We will get through this, as our governor and everyone else is assuring us. But we all have a part to play here, and part of that is to abide by the precautions that we've been advised to follow, and to do that judiciously. It's the only way forward. And you know, one day we'll look back on this and we'll remember it, and there will be bruises and scars, and life is never going to be like it was, but in some ways it could be better. Now, just as an example, I heard read something the other day that the air is cleaner right now because there's less travel. So you know, there are some silver linings to some of this disruption, I think, and that's what we've got to look for. And let me say, Jim, I've heard from Arlen Deese, who is the owner of Hemingbow, that the Easter sunrise services have been canceled. So for any of the listeners who might have intended to come, schedule it for next Easter.
Paul in Opelousas has been waiting patiently. Paul, good morning. You're on the air with Reverend Andrews.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Reverend. Just Cradle of Grave Catholics, I love my church. Haven't been able to go. We love church. Do you think that when we are released from this, I should say, that the number of people who really respect going to church is going to really increase?
All right. What about church attendance increasing? It's been decreasing. Will it go up after this?
That's a good question, and I really don't know. I mean, we may be so hungry for fellowship and for personal contact with others that we do go back, and we may be wanting to go back because we're thankful that we've survived and gotten through the crisis. But I really don't know what the outcome will be. The other side of that is that churches may find, you know, I was thinking of this the other day, we don't need these huge buildings and the costs that go with them. We've got all this virtual world. We can sit down and do things, you know, on a screen. I don't find that to be nearly as satisfying, but it could be that, you know, that becomes a part of the new reality. I don't know. I do know that Paul in Opelousas is speaking from my hometown, and there's some beautiful churches in that community and some beautiful people there, and I wish them well.
There are. And often on my walks, even though I am a Roman Catholic, if I see a church, I'll see if it's open, even though there is no service. And I noticed that several churches are leaving their doors open for congregants. And, of course, they do so at the risk of looters and things like that. But God bless them for doing so.
Indeed. And we need sacred space. And, Jim, there's no space more sacred, in my opinion, than to be out under the beautiful blue sky. and hearing the birds and looking at the trees and these spring flowers that we're seeing. So I urge people to get out and take walks. Just observe that social distancing.
And it's important. When we've been deprived of things we cherish, whether they're hobbies or whatever you want, at this point our lifestyle's been rocked, but one thing we can do is go out and take a walk, and we've been blessed with very good weather here since we've had this order in place to stay home. Now, here's a question, and Grant in New Orleans listening online asks about whether this is a precursor to the end times that the good book refers to. Are we facing end times based on what's going on?
I don't think so. I frankly am not much of a proponent of the end time philosophy. I think that we're in tough times, and there are going to be some real sad moments with what we're going through. But by no means is the world coming to an end, and that is just, you know, a kind of a panic button that we don't need to be pushing, because it doesn't ever pan out. All of these predictions are never what they call themselves to be, truthful. There was a fellow named Hal Lindsey who wrote a book, The Late Great Planet Earth, which he predicted the end of the world, made himself a millionaire many times over, and we're still rocking along, but good people spent a lot of money and probably anxious moments reading his predictions. So I would say leave that off your scope.
Well, in these times, governors in many states are becoming more famous than they ordinarily would be, because they're going on the air daily, including our governor. And and people rely on their leaders to provide them with information and for hope. And Governor John Bel Edwards has done a good job thus far, as has Governor Cuomo in New York, Governor Newsom in California. Governor DeWine, a Republican in Ohio, has gotten good reviews. And he was the first, by the way, to have this complete lockdown that we're facing here in Louisiana. And Governor Beshear in Kentucky, they had a story about him on Morning Edition about how 5 o'clock, apparently viewership is like through the roof when he goes on the air. These are like FDR's old fireside chats during the Depression. And Governor Edwards has announced that his request for a statewide major disaster declaration has been approved by President Trump. The declaration allows the federal government to provide additional support for state and local agencies in dealing with the growing public health emergency, and the governor is quick to commend the president. And whether we like the president or not, I'll give him this. He comes out there every day. Now, he does show signs of a man under enormous stress, which we know he is, but he does come out there every day. He hasn't gone into hiding, which, of course, sometimes people do when they're under stress. But, Chris Andrews, when a leader like our president is all stressed out and goes before the masses and shows that he is stressed out, does that help or hurt the cause?
Well, you know, I think we kind of key off our leaders, and the attitude and outlook that they demonstrate has a way of becoming our attitude and outlook. So I would appreciate the fact that our governor has shown a steady hand, as have others, as you've alluded to. And the president, I think, needs to do that as well. We, you know, Roosevelt said we had nothing to fear but fear itself. Well, you can parse that in a lot of different ways, but we need our leaders to demonstrate a sense of confidence that things are going to get better, and that they are in charge and in control as much as they can be in this moment, and making sensible decisions that will benefit the whole of the populace.
Well, it's an uncertain time, and just to show you how uncertain it is, I just got a note here from NOLA.com. Peter Kovacs, the editor of The Advocate and The Picayune, who's been with us a long time, he says, our local journalists are here for you, and as a public service, we have made our coronavirus coverage open for all readers. Please consider contributing to our newsroom today. Every dollar helps us provide vital and in-depth local news coverage when our city and our state need it the most. And then there's a prompt to contribute $100, contribute $500, contribute $1,000. And this is from the newspaper of record, which earlier this week was forced to lay off 10% of its staff, cut its work week to 4 days. This is a remarkable overture by a media outlet, which is doing essentially what you do as a man of the cloth. You rely on contributions from your congregants, and this is like saying, "Please help us; we're in trouble."
Right? Yeah. I mean, it just underscores how severe and serious this crisis is, and none of us are going to get by unscathed. We're all going to feel the pain, and are feeling the pain now. I mean, just look at the businesses, small businesses, restaurants. I was thinking about the person who cuts my hair. That individual hasn't received any salary, I'm sure.
What are we going to do about haircuts, Reverend Andrews?
Well, I have a lovely wife who will probably take that on if it gets too bad. But, those are the kinds of things you have to think about. I mean, you know, all of that's right now suspended. Pray you don't chip a tooth or have a toothache. I know you can get emergency dental services, but dentists are closed down. I mean, you just begin to think about it. It's mind-boggling what we're in. And so the newspaper record asking for contributions to keep themselves afloat, that just is a good symbol of how severe a crisis we are in.
Well, Reverend Andrews, we'll be calling on you again, and until further notice, we'll reserve Wednesdays for people of the cloth, and next Wednesday it's the Bishop of Baton Rouge, Michael Duca. Well, but God bless you, Chris Andrews.
God bless you, Jim, and thank you, and God bless our community, our state, and our world.
Thank you. We're joined now, we will be going to a break shortly, by Bobby Ragsdale. Captain Ragsdale is from Newman High in New Orleans. He grew up in that area, and he was class president at West Point, graduate of that great school. Also, he was class student body president at Newman, and he was vice president of his class at Harvard grad school. So, Captain Ragsdale, we're going to take a break here shortly, but I've set the stage. You're a man who's now in business in New Orleans, and you've been following these scams, and we've got about 20 seconds for you to give us the short version of how bad it is right now with people trying to capitalize on others' misfortune.
Right. Well, it's interesting that it's easy to be mad at those people, but the truth is that a lot of the laws and the culture we have around dynamic pricing are harmful and can actually restrict access to goods and enable hoarding. And so what I want to talk about is how the policy choices we make actually enable people to hoard goods and
All right, hold tight. We're going to talk with Captain Bobby Ragsdale when we return. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, and we're spending a few minutes with Captain Bobby Ragsdale, one of the most impressive young people in Louisiana at the age of 35. I hope that he'll run for office at some point. But right now he's a business person. As mentioned, he was president of his class at West Point, vice president of his class in Harvard grad school, and he was, oh, by the way, president of his class at Newman in New Orleans. And he is a business person, and he is keeping track of some of the scams with people trying to profiteer during these hard times. And tell us what you're dealing with, or what we're dealing with, Captain Ragsdale.
Sure. So you see these shortages popping up, and there's been a lot of media coverage on people who are profiting, going out and buying lots of toilet paper or hand sanitizer or masks and then selling them at steep profits. And eBay's been shutting them down, and Amazon's been canceling their accounts. And there's a lot of sort of residual schadenfreude, I guess, about those people that people see as either gross or immoral or profiteers. And it's easy to feel that way about those people. I used to be one of them, and more people who feel that way about profiteers, because I grew up in Louisiana, like all of us. We're living through a unique situation right now, but residents of Louisiana are no stranger to disaster. Hurricanes come through all the time, and we're very used to the idea of store shelves going bare. And after Katrina, people can remember those businesses that tried to raise their prices tremendously versus those that became community heroes by holding the line and not raising their prices over what they used to be. But there's trouble with that because we have a culture in this country around pricing and around laws that is very intuitive. As human beings, we didn't really evolve to think about things in certain ways, and we have very interesting ideas about fairness. And the idea generally is that people should not profit from disaster, and that people should not take advantage of other people. But the reality is, in a capitalist society, which is driven by the market is not a tool to fuel greed, which, by the way, greed is a loaded word for self-interest. It's emotionally based. What we want is a market that delivers supplies to the consumer at a rate that is the most efficient, so that people have to make hard choices about the things that they want and don't want whenever there's scarcity, because at all times, unless we're talking about air and water, things that are tremendously valuable but plentiful, those things are free. There's no scarcity to air and very little to water in this country anyway. There is scarcity for things like toilet paper or food or masks or gasoline or any of those things. And whenever there is scarcity, which is not as much as you could want whenever you want, there have to be ways of rationing those goods off. And we tend to use pricing to do that in this country most of the time. If you don't use pricing, you have to use other means, whether it's coupon rationing, you know, only people can only have so many each, or sometimes time. My old economics professor at Harvard told me one time, he says, I get a coffee every morning before work from Starbucks. It costs me $4. The day that Starbucks gave those coffees away for free would be the day that coffee would be too expensive for me, because I'd have to wait in line for so long in order to get it.
Right.
And in the same way, so now we see a problem where, let's talk about, you know, any one of these issues, hand sanitizer, let's say. A man goes around and buys up all the hand sanitizer all over the country because he sees, or all of his community, because he sees the opportunity for a crisis coming and he sees the demand rising. And it's easy to think of that person as a profiteer and evil and wicked. But I would offer a counterintuitive read on it. And to be clear, as a businessman, I'm in real estate development. I'm not in retail at all. So I have no dog in this fight, except that I care about good public policy. He goes around and buys up all the hand sanitizer. Well, first off, that was allowed to happen because other retail outlets are not using dynamic pricing. They're using a fixed pricing that allows him to go and buy it up all at once. Then he turns around and tries to sell it at a markup that forces people to make choices. Because right, wouldn't it be better if one person has all of the hand sanitizer and can sell it easily and everybody knows where to go to get it, vice millions of people having way more than they need and then millions of other people having none? Because that's the world that we live in, where lots of people went out and bought all the toilet paper, all the bread, all the hand sanitizer they could, masks, and now the people who need them don't have them. And so what people, I think, fail to realize is that you're not choosing between cheap, plentiful goods and expensive, plentiful goods. You're choosing from cheap, scarce goods and expensive, plentiful goods.
All right. Well, Bobby, we're going to have to pause this conversation, and I'd like to get an update from you very soon. Captain Bobby Ragsdale, who, of course, is one of the hot spots in this country right now in the greater New Orleans area for COVID-19. Captain, thank you for talking with us, and we'll be calling again soon. I sure appreciate your comments. And we're joined now by Jessica Jane in New York City, where there are more cases per capita, more total cases than there are anywhere in the country right now of COVID-19. She is a graduate of Louisiana State University, got her master's degree in theater at LSU, and dominated the stage at the Swine Palace and the Riley Theater for a few years, and she is joining us from the Big Apple. And good morning to you, Jessica.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. I hope you're doing well.
We're doing our best.
Well, you, as an actress right now, are sidelined. Broadway is shuttered. New York, I suspect, with virtually no activity, is a surreal sight at this point.
It is. It is. I was, you know, really, we were all trying hard to quarantine, but I had no choice but to go downtown yesterday, and it was eerie. It was just the strangest thing I've ever seen. It feels like a doomsday movie.
What is the attitude of the people in your community in particular, those who are artistic souls who like to perform and love crowds and certainly like it when people appreciate their work, but now there's no bad reviews because because there are no crowds and no critics. It is a case in which you're on the sidelines until further notice.
It's, I think, obviously, I think everybody's scared, but I think, I don't know if you remember last year, he hosted the Tonys last year, and of course, right at this moment, I want to say his name is Jim Inkster, but your name is Jim Inkster, he hosted the Tony Awards last year, and he's, oh my God, why can't I remember his name? But he basically
James,
said about...
Wasn't it James Corden?
James Corden, there we go. He basically said that he had never met another community like the Broadway community, because they're so hardworking and they're so dedicated and their spirit is so fierce. And honestly, I think that is the general mood of the whole community. People are trying to support each other as much as they can. They're getting online. Rosie O'Donnell did a special for her birthday where people from, you know, people like Kelly O'Hara and, you know, just like the best of the best of the Broadway community were, you know, calling in via FaceTime and singing and giving their gifts for donations for the Actors Fund. So we're all just trying to pull together and keep each other sane and happy. I have a friend, Todd Buonapane, who's a veteran of Broadway, and he's doing something called bathtub theater. Every night he does a monologue from his bathtub, and it's a delight. It's a delight. People are really making the best out of a truly, truly scary and horrifying situation.
Well, in New York, you live close together and quite often live together. You as an actress who's probably on an income that's not quite lavish. I'm just guessing. I don't know. I'm just guessing. I bet you have roommates.
I do. And all of us work in the theater. So.
And the hardship. Yeah. The hardship financially, in addition to the fact that when obviously you're in close proximity to other people, the hardship financially has to be something that is devastating as well.
It is. I think it's times like these that we are incredibly grateful for our unions and because I don't know if a lot of people know this, but a lot of professional actors are in one of two unions. They're either in Actors Equity, which is the stage union, or they're in SAG-AFTRA, which is the film union. And I know that the people who work for the Broadway League and the Actors Fund and our unions are working so hard to make sure that we have resources available to take care of us. I think us actors are just very union proud right now, because there's so many people that are advocating for us and advocating for the people who do have money to take care of us.
Well, I hope that we'll see you on stage again soon, either in New York or somewhere else, or perhaps in Louisiana. You have returned home since leaving here. What has it been now, 5 or 6 years now?
It's been 6 years, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, you're missed in Louisiana, and I'm glad you're doing well in New York under the circumstances. But but it's great to hear you talk and laugh, and let's keep the faith, and hopefully we'll talk in better times when we have our next conversation. But thanks for joining
us.
From
good, Jim. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jessica, joining us from New
Bye-bye.
York City. Jessica Jane, who is an exceptional talent, remember the name, and signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. For Jeff Palermo, I'm Jim Inkster. We're back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay tuned.